Thanks for tuning in to the Big Show podcast. In this interview, we interview U.S. Congressman Joe Sestak. Now, Joe's a freshman congressman representing the 7th U.S. District, which encompasses two counties. It's Delaware County and also Chester County, both located in the southeastern part of Pennsylvania. Joe's a freshman coming off of an over 30-year military career where he made it up to the rank of Vice Admiral. During the interview, you'll hear me call him Admiral, but I believe being only 3 stars led him to be a Vice Admiral. Now, Joe won the election over longtime incumbent Kurt Weldon, who at the end of his career was mired in a little bit of controversy for some of the practices and hirings within his family. Also, Kurt represented a lot of the defense industry that we have in this area, including McDonnell Douglas and Boeing. And so Joe took those positions over. But one of his main causes was he didn't want to be considered a one-trick pony. Although that he is an admiral in the U.S. Navy, he didn't want to be thought of as only being able to talk about important issues on the war. Also, health care and equality seems to be a big drive of Joe. So we got to talk to Joe right after he was coming off the floor doing some voting and getting ready to go back onto the floor of Congress to do some voting. Also joining me in this interview is a producer of the podcast here on The Big Show, Charlie Silvestri. He's been a friend of the show for a few years now, and Charlie had some questions to ask, and we'll talk a little bit more about Charlie in the future, but here's The Big Show. You'll find us live on 1420 WCOJ, and you also find us broadcasting here at Podomatic.com. So thanks for being here. Well, what's going on today? What's been going on today? What's going on tonight?
Right. What we're going to try to do today is get two important bills through. We just voted on getting the money for about $250 million over for the bridge with the collapse of Minnesota. But we're going to do the defense appropriations bill this evening. And the second bill that we're going to do is the FISA bill, which has to do with the National Security Agency and its ability to listen in and eavesdrop. As you might remember, this caused a lot of concern when it became public that after 9/11 occurred, the president decided not to come to what's called the FISA court. That is a court that's established that if he wants to eavesdrop on a communication between someone on a phone in Europe, who they believe is a terrorist, and someone who's a U.S. citizen here in America, that he can do that and has up to 72 hours afterwards to inform the court, the secret court, to just make sure that you have a judicial court to make sure we aren't breaking civil rights. He decided unilaterally not to do that, just to unilaterally decide that after 9/11, he had the right not to come to the court at all. And we're trying to fix that to ensure that he has all the dexterity, the flexibility he needs to listen in on communications, but to make sure that the court, without slowing it down at all, because it can be after the fact, ensures that he comes back and at least it's reviewed to make sure civil rights aren't somehow caught up, as has been reported in some incidents already, in our right to listen in on terrorist activity.
Now, there's been a bunch of things that have been going on as of late. There's been bill after bill. There's been a lot of activity in Washington. One of it was the recommendations by the 9/11 Commission and that information. Tell us a little bit about what went on there.
Yes. After 9/11 happened, the 9/11 Commission was established, and they made a recommendations, 41 of them, to the Bush administration of how to help prevent and best respond to, if it happened again, another terrorist attack on American soil. After about a year and a half later, after they had issued its report, they did a report card on it and reported to the administration that out of 41 recommendations, 31 they gave an F, a D, a C, or an incomplete. The first act we did when we came here in those 4-5 January, as we were sworn in, was to vote in order to implement by law those 41 recommendations. Now, it took a while to get it over to the Senate side, and now it's come back, and we now have voted together to implement them and gave the money, the increase in the appropriations bill, more than the Bush administration has said, to do it. Why is this of importance? Take where we live. The Philadelphia region, 5.6 million citizens. It is a key economic transportation infrastructure hub. We have railroads. We have freight lines on those railroads. We have refineries. We have I-95 waterways and SEPTA, the Northeast Coordinator for Amtrak. It is such an important site that the insurance industry has rated it as in the top 10 sites in America as far as being vulnerable to a terrorist attack. And yet Philadelphia region actually went down on spending that was given to it by the federal government over the last few years. And so small things like saying, no longer will you distribute money according to the population. That is, everybody gets their fair share. If there's a lot of people living in a cornfield in Iowa, they get the same as the people sitting in New York City or Philadelphia. We did it based upon risk, the vast majority of it based upon risk. We ensured that we gave money that would now screen overseas, starting, it'll take about 5 years to accomplish it, all ships that are coming here with containers to screen them for nuclear or radioactive material, and money that presently we do not screen the cargo that's put on passenger aircraft leading any airfield in America. We are funded to do that now. It's going to take some time. We could have done this, by the way. You know, this war in Iraq is costing us $10 billion a month. For the cost of 2 days of that war, we could do all the airports in America, screen them for all cargo going as VM aircraft. For the cost of 5 days of that war, we could have been screening all the ships coming over to America for radioactive material. So we have taken a large step, recognize that national security begins here at home.
U.S. Congressman Joe Sestak joins us at the Big Show. Admiral, thanks for hanging on there.
Absolutely.
Real quick, just getting back to the cargo inspection, the distribution of the funding, were you shocked at how long this took to get done? Should it have taken this long for those recommendations to actually be implemented?
Well, it's interesting. None of them had been implemented for almost three and a half years, and we got it all through in less than 6 months, or just about 6 months. So do I wish we could have done it this Congress even shorter? Absolutely. But it's a democratic process. A lot of people have different viewpoints, but we did it. And nothing was done. Nothing was done on them in those previous three and a half years. So it got through. You know, as Winston Churchill said, is he has great confidence in the character of the American people. They eventually do the right thing after they've tried everything else. Well, the key here is we don't have time to wait. We had to push this through. And in a place where we don't have a veto proof yet over the president, we had to make sure that the Republicans were here with us and it got by in a bipartisan way. So if anything's going to be done successfully in the long term, things like ending this war properly, because ending it is necessary, but it's insufficient. How and the means by which we do it is even more important, both for troop security as they redeploy and the security that this nation wants to have in that region afterwards, or whether it's health care or whether it's education. Ultimately, a bipartisan, as much as possible approach will mean it be cemented and followed more truly than if it isn't.
Well, you brought up a couple of big issues here, and one of them being the war. When you were running for election, you talked about it. Of course, you're a three-star admiral, so it's hard to not consider you an expert with the military. You've talked a lot about the redeployment. You've talked a lot about how you think America should be working in Iraq that were there. What, since you've become a congressman, has stayed the same? What has changed? And out of bills that have talked about the timelines, the date, what have you supported? What have you been against? And what would you really like to see happen, although nothing has happened on that forefront as of yet?
Great questions. My answer will include having visited Iraq with Senator Hagel. The two of us went together. He called me after I was on Meet the Press and said, Joe, I'd like to get together. And when we got together, he said, let's go over. Best 3 days of my time traveling with that senator, Republican from Nebraska. So with a lot of perspective from being there and having, you know, led a carrier battle group that we flew over there, my take on it is I have not deviated at all. The only strategy that can help us overall be more secure and actually changes the incentives of nations in that region, Iran, Syria, and Saudi Arabia in particular, as well as the Iraqi government, is when we say a date is certain. We will not be here. Step up to the plate, because as the National Intelligence Council said in testimony a month ago, Iran does not want a failed state or fractionalized government if we aren't there. It wants us to be hurt while we're there, but if we're not, it doesn't. So what I have is we have three common elements for a bipartisan approach, and I think this is so important. Because my party, the Democrats, must turn from pure opposition to this war to understanding that we need to be able to help author a comprehensive, implementable security plan for the aftermath, because this isn't Bush's war when men and women wear the cloth of the nation or overseas fighting. It is our war. And we also have to understand, I think, the following. One, our army will unravel with acceleration beginning this spring if it doesn't if it hasn't begun redeploying. Every military officer has told us that, including the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff nominee just 2 days ago. Number two, the time to redeploy is not tomorrow to make it happen. I just finished testimony again today with the services, the Secretary of Defense, that Deputy Secretary of Defense. We have to remember it took us 6 months to get out of Somalia after Black Hawk down with 6,300 troops, because when you redeploy is when you're most vulnerable in any military operation. We put in 19,000 troops to help protect them on the redeployment, and the Soviet Union lost 500 soldiers being shot to death in explosions as they redeployed 120,000 troops out of Afghanistan a decade or two ago, decade and a half ago, in 9 months. We have 160,000 troops, upwards of 50 to 100,000 U.S. contractors there. There's one road out. And I have gone through the long poles in the tent. It would take a minimum of a year to do it safely, and really to do it well, 15 to 20 months. That's why we now have not just that we must redeploy for the safety for the troops where they will unravel the army, because there's not one unit at home ready to redeploy anywhere in the world. Their state of readiness is so low. Second, there's a state amount of time it will take. We must now announce the date and then turn to the third most important element, the one arrow in our arsenal we have not used, diplomacy. The road out of Iraq is through Tehran. We must be able to sit down and lead with confidence with that country who has serious problems of its own. Gas riots at the beginning of July because they raised gas prices 25 cents to 38 cents. They've just had an election a few months ago where they voted for a moderate middle-grade government, not the highest levels yet. And if we engage and bring those nations together with confidence of our diplomacy, and then start this redeployment as the incentive that we will remain in the region but be strong, then we have an amount of success. But most important of all is this nation, who is tired of this war, still wants to salvage the best of its situation, and we need to do it in a bipartisan way. This country's asking for that. I believe a date certain is the one remaining leverage, the catalyst to make the incentives and the behavior of all those nations there work for work for stability, to leave behind an unfailed state as we deploy safely, because they do not want those millions of refugees that are dislocated in Iraq to come over their border, nor to have proxy wars among Saudis, Iranians, and Syrians.
Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to the podcast of The Big Show here on Podomatic. And this is the second half of our interview with U.S. Congressman Joe Sestak, who represents the 7th Congressional District in the southeastern part of Pennsylvania. Joining us on this part of the interview was our podcast producer, Charlie Silvestri. He's been a longtime friend of the show. He joins me on the show every once in a while, and he was kind enough to join this interview with Congressman Sestak. So Charlie had quite a few questions, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more from Charlie in the future.
Hi, Charlie.
Hey, Admiral, I'm very happy that you're here today, because I consider myself, you know, just an average Joe. And as an average Joe, I'd like to ask, or at least set this up for you so maybe you can answer. The administration is always dead set against giving a date certain. At least that's the way it seems to just a regular guy like me who follows along in the media. What I'd like to know is there any possible way that you can build a bipartisan effort that would overpower this you know, stubborn, what seems to me to be a stubborn administration? Every time I see in the media a Republican or two talking against the administration, or, you know, wavering possibly, ultimately it seems that that Republican eventually jumps back in lockstep. What can you do? What can one man do on the Democrat side to convince the other side that, yes, we need to change this? Please, please tell me that there's hope.
Yeah, there is hope. But I got to tell you, I can't tell you it's going to be successful. I spent 2.5 hours in a meeting yesterday, broken by a vote again, with Speaker Pelosi and about 8 Democrats. My take, my serious advice had been, we must reach out to the Republicans. There's no politics in this. I believe there are efforts by Frank Wolf, the representative. I met with 5 Republicans in his group, and I met with Walter Jones and 4 Republicans in his group. And there's others on the Senate side. I'm trying to go over to see Senator Lugar, but I'm focused primarily, obviously, in the House, to where they have moved. And it's a beginning to saying that the Baker-Hamilton study that came out last December that said begin the redeployment, have the combat brigades out by this past April, if we can at least get that to be out there as the beginning, we've made significant progress, because it was a bipartisan study. I spoke with Congressman Hamilton, matter of fact, on the phone, and he was in my office again yesterday. I spoke to Dr. William Perry, Secretary of Defense, who was on the panel during the Clinton administration. He was on this panel, Baker-Hamilton. They all want to do, and feel it, excuse me, they are supportive of doing a update of the Baker-Hamilton study and then putting it out there when General Petraeus's report comes over in September. I've been trying to move an amendment along that way. There are those, however, that feel we should be at end date indefinitely. I feel it should be. But if we can get the Republicans to move towards having this report updated and out there, when General Petraeus's report comes back, and I expect it, and I was in on a briefing in the Pentagon about 3 weeks ago with him, I expect it to be to say, I see in the military situation the sun beginning to rise a little bit, and things are looking here. We've caught so many al-Qaeda. We've caught of Iraq al-Qaeda. We've captured so many ammunition dumps. My answer to that is the following. Against what benchmark? How many al-Qaeda are there, and are they increasing in numbers? How many arms catches are there out there? And if you can't tell us with your intelligence, how can you tell us that these static metrics mean something?
And may I interrupt you, Admiral, and just follow up a little bit with something you just said? Everybody has been saying everybody that matters is waiting for General Petraeus. But in the meantime, there are so many people dying. Why do we keep saying we're going to wait, we're going to wait, we're going to wait?
See, and to my point, well,
does anybody on Capitol Hill understand that average Joes, you know, I don't want to wait. They want their friends and family to come home.
There is let me step back and answer. Let me finish just one thing on General Petraeus. The important point about General Petraeus' report, he's coming out as a military man to tell us the military situation. We need something out there that places it in context of, how about politically? Are we making progress? How about the impact of this war in Iraq on our army and how it might begin to unravel? There's no context to how we have permitted one military man to make an issue. We've never done that in our nation. Elected policymakers, the president has always said, this is what I believe. Now back to your question. Yes, I believe that we would be best to have start and to do a date certain. But it's not a democracy. It's a representative democracy. Those who come from areas, and even though the polls shows upwards of 70% of the Americans support a redeployment, the polls also show they want to salvage some. But that said, when a congressman comes from a district that might, you know, all the people in his district feel, or let's take a senator, he comes from a state that only has, I'm going to make it up, 5 million, then he has as much of a vote as someone who comes from a state with 100 million. Well, we don't have any, but with a large million. It's representative. So there are parts of America who still believe that you can hold on and the military will resolve this. I don't. And so I press every day. I have taken this on as the defining issue. I work on health care. I've had 3 health summits, 2 health summits, and education summits, 3 of them, all that. But this is the most defining issue for the reason you say yes, but also because we need to ensure that the aftermath of Iraq leaves us with a secure region there so we don't have to put men and women back. I hear you, and that message is loud and clear here. but it still is a representative democracy, and we have to compel them and with our logic, as well as what you bring up of why we must begin to think about a redeployment, do a redeployment, and in enough time frame that we protect our troops as they redeploy. Charlie, that's the best answer I can give you.
Thank you. I appreciate your time, Admiral.
Thank you, Tom.
Admiral, I want to ask you, I'm going to change the subject real quick, just a little bit. You know, the elections are quite a way away, but, you know, there's a lot of debates going on and the primaries are running up. You're friends with Bill Clinton. You worked closely with the Clinton administration. I'm sure you've met Mrs. Clinton several times. As you look forward to the elections, are you swayed anywhere? What do you think Democrats have, and what are their chances?
Yes, I think the entire field of candidates is outstanding on the Democratic side. And, you know, I had thought before he changed some of the positions that Mr. Romney was an attractive candidate because he had brought in as a Democrat, as a Republican governor, working with a Democratic legislator in a bipartisan way, he brought a health care plan to Massachusetts that covered almost everyone. And I was taken with that, but he's flopped on some issues. My point is, I guess to go back to the Democrat side, I support Senator Clinton. I support her for the, I think they're all great. But what I know in Senator Clinton, having met her and worked a bit with her in the White House, having testified before her in Congress, having gotten to know her a bit in the campaign, and obviously the president's been a magnificent supporter of mine, is that what we need now is we've come to a fork in the road for our country. And as Yogi Berra said, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. We need someone to take us down the right road who understands how to roll up his or her sleeves immediately, understands Washington, and fixes it. This is a person who understands the boiler room, not just up there in the bridge ring where we need a leader of hope, because after all, good politicians are like good military leaders or dealers of hope. But we need someone who understands how the piping's put together in the boiler room and can start that on day one, because we don't have time for any learning. We have a $9 trillion debt. In the last 6 years, the health premiums have gone up 78% for Pennsylvanians. And the cost of a public university, health, flagship public university in 4 years has gone up 58% for tuition. We need to address these issues immediately and how to best end this war, because our security demands it. We need some additional troops in Afghanistan, where the center of gravity has actually moved into Pakistan. We have a safe haven there right now. And we need to be engaged throughout this world and get our army here home back up. But we need to reinvest to ensure that we have healthy, productive citizens. We've lost 607 small businesses in Delaware County, which is 85% of my district, in the last 3 years. That's why I asked to be on the Small Business Committee. We need to get this country going in the right direction to the quality of life for our children. Robert, yours and mine, and we've talked about that, is better than it was for us. And we have pretty good quality of life, but all boats aren't rising right now.
Finally, Congressman, on the lightest note, because I know I have to let you go or they're going to call me and tell me you have to go vote. On the lightest note, have you gotten your sea legs in Congress there? You're still a freshman, or are you walking around the halls and you still have a couple stars attached to your
It's a great question. I was just talking to a constituent today, stopped in unexpectedly, and whenever they stop in, and for any constituent listening, you stop down here, you call ahead of time, we'll get you a tour of the Capitol, and I will stop anything I'm doing to meet a constituent. But I said to them, I finally got my sea legs. The first 6 months, it was a little bit like a tsunami, because normally the first 2 months you don't do legislation, and we did. And then there was a war going on, and I took over from someone on a different party who had been in for 20 years. It was a change, and people want to see the new one. But now there's a much more deliberate and focused, intense approach. And the thing I'm most proud of is this, though, Robert. My constituency service staff up in my district, I have some senior women, 72 years old, down to young interns. I had 44 helping us this summer. And I went to Gentilly Supermarket. I usually go to a congressman on the corner to a supermarket every Saturday morning, 7:30 till about 9. They just stand there to listen to constituents go in and out. I was outside Gentilly's. And four of the people who came by said, I want to thank you for your constituent service, everything from getting a passport through to Social Security help and on. So I feel, to end this, that, I've learned that I'm a representative. I need to represent the approximately 700,000 votes and listen to them and come down to it. At the same time, they elected me to be a congressman and helped to have some judgment they trusted me with because of my experience, such as in how to approach this best way of the war in Iraq. If I ever deviate too much because my judgment appears different to how they want to represent me, I will no longer be elected as representative. But balancing those two, and always remember that it matters what happens at home, is how I've gotten the most enjoyment out of doing this, and I feel I've got a good balance here, and I intend to try to improve on that every day.
And I guess the family's used to you being the congressman now?
They are. My daughter, Alex, as you know, she was my best campaigner, and she would go down and pass out brochures, said, vote for Joe Sestak, vote for Joe Sestak. Now when I come home, she says, hi, Joe Sestak. And I say, hon, it's daddy to you.
Well, Admiral, I want to thank you for taking time out of your voting day and joining us on The Big Show, and I hope you have a great weekend.
Robert, thanks. Thanks for giving me a chance to talk to constituents.